Welcome to The End of Innocence. I'm your host, John Young. So far in our look of the groups or individuals that benefited the most from John Kennedy's assassination, we have looked at the military-industrial complex, who wanted JFK dead, because they wanted a war and he was not going to give them the war they wanted in Cuba or Vietnam. We also looked at the CIA, who Kennedy promised to shatter into 1,000 pieces. They were convinced that Kennedy was selling the country out, and he had gotten soft on Castro and the Russians. Last week, we started looking at another group that really needed Kennedy dead, the Mafia. JFK and his brother Robert were making things tough on the mobsters. Starting in the late 1950s, the Kennedy brothers launched unprecedented attacks on the American Mafia. Now that JFK had the White House, the mob knew their days were numbered.
Something has happened in the motorcade route. Something, I repeat, has happened in the motorcade route. There's numerous people running up the hill alongside Elm Street, there by the Simmons Freeway. Several police officers are rushing up the hill at this time. Stand by.
From Dallas, Texas, the flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time, some 38 minutes ago.
This is just in from Dallas. Homicide Chief Captain Will Fritz said today the assassination case against Lee Harvey Oswald is cinched. He said flatly, "This is the man that killed President Kennedy, 24-year-old Lee Harvey Oswald."
Come on, man. President. No, they're taking me in because of the fact that I live in Missouri. I'm just a patsy. Shot. Lee Oswald has been shot. There's a man with a gun.
Twelve years after the controversial Warren Commission concluded that Oswald had acted alone in killing the president, Congress launches a new investigation into JFK's assassination. In 1977, the House Select Committee on Assassinations, led by veteran Mafia prosecutor G. Robert Blakely, takes on the mob directly and subpoenas the testimony of the Godfathers themselves.
And it's my best judgment that he was killed as a result of a conspiracy, and the shape and color of the conspiracy is organized crime.
So as Prosecutor Blakely begins to take on the mob directly and subpoenas the testimony from the Godfathers themselves, suspiciously two of them are now unavailable to appear.
So I'll take the Fifth Amendment that may intend to incriminate me.
A year earlier, Johnny Rosselli's decomposing body was found floating in a Miami canal, and the one-time boss of the Chicago outfit, Sam Giacconi, is also dead, shot seven times in his own kitchen.
Carlos Marcello had a sign in his office that said, "Three can keep a secret if two are dead." He and his partner, Santo Traficante, seemed to be able to put that into practice.
Out of money and time and facing a lack of cooperation from the CIA and FBI, Congress closes the committee's investigation in 1979. In the years that follow, the chance of penetrating the JFK conspiracy seems to steadily fade. That is, until a shocking confession is heard inside a federal prison. In 1985, Thomas Kimmel, an FBI supervisor who specializes in organized crime, is sent to run a field office in Texas.
Carlos Marcello was in prison in my territory. So it looked to me like this was a very worthy target, really, to determine whether or not Carlos Marcello still held sway over the New Orleans La Cosa Nostra.
Inside Texarkana Prison, Kimmel launches a secret investigation into Carlos Marcelo's criminal activity.
Our investigation was initiated without any reference whatsoever to the JFK assassination. Of course, you never know what you're going to get when you start into these investigations.
The operation depends on a reliable FBI informant, Jack Van Landingham.
What brought me into Texas penitentiary is that I was convicted of bank robbery, and I was sentenced to 8 years. When I got to the penitentiary, I wouldn't have known a mafia from a 5-cent cigar. He was dressed in the most beautiful tailored shirt, and his shoes were Gucci. They weren't prison issue. He had pure white silver hair.
Over a month, Jack Van Landingham and Carlos Marcelo, the oldest inmates in Texarkana, become friends. According to Jack, the camaraderie attracts the attention of prison staff, and he is summoned to a secret meeting with an FBI agent.
He said, Jack, I'm in a position to make you an offer. If you can get information that we need, you'll walk out of here a free man. I said, tell me something. Do I have any real choice in this or don't I? He says, no, you don't. He says, you haven't got no choice.
Jack says the FBI arranges for him to become Marcelo's cellmate. He is also instructed to buy a personal radio from the prison store.
I said, Marcelo, I hope you don't mind. I bought me a radio. I like to listen to music. I know you do. I put it up on his case. The radio was transmitting to a tape deck that ran 24 hours a day in Dallas, Texas.
Hundreds of hours of audio tape are recorded in Marcelo's cell, but many of their conversations occurred not on tape, but in the open space of the prison yard.
And we're sitting there and just shooting the breeze, and he said, just out of a blue sky, that dirty swine had me flown out of the United States to Guatemala. He wasn't mad at the president. He was mad at his brother. But he knew that if he could get to the president, it was the end of the attorney general. And these sort of things, Marcelo wasn't no dummy. You know, when it comes to murder and planning things and crime and dirty things, he was a genius. And we're sitting there, and he said, I'm going to tell you something. I had the little bastard killed, and I would do it again. He was a thorn in my shoe. I quote, Marcelo realized what he had said. And, you know, we started talking about other things. In my guts, I was so shocked and horrified. I knew that I had had enough, and I couldn't tolerate too much more of this.
As soon as he safely can, Jack reports what Marcelo has told him to his FBI handler.
And I explained to him exactly what I had heard. He says, you know, you're going to have to take a polygraph. I said, fine. I said, look, things is coming to a head here. I am scared every minute of my life with the things that you're doing and me caught in the middle.
Van Landingham's burden would grow as he claims to hear more about how the mob assassinated John F. Kennedy.
He didn't bullshit. He very seldom said anything that was really incriminating, but he even knew himself when he looked at me after he said it.
In the long months ahead, while Jack Van Landingham waits for the FBI to free him, he maintains that Carlos Marcelo tells him more about the assassination.
He told me that the shooter was his boy, had him down to his farm in New Orleans numerous times. I said, who are you talking about, Carlos? He says, you know who I'm talking about. The guy they claim shot Kennedy from the book depository. He says, the guy was my man. I had him in my pocket. I had him in my pocket. He did what the hell I told him to do. And he said, We figured the cops was gonna blow him away when they saw him up in the depository. But they didn't. That is on tape. Ruby is his man in Texas. He's running his organizations there. He's skimming off of Marcello. He owes him. He owes him big. He could have had him killed, but he didn't. He kept him in his pocket for what he was planning.
On the morning of November 22, 1963, the President and First Lady arrive in Dallas for a motorcade through downtown Dallas. Lee Harvey Oswald, a 24-year-old ex-Marine with a professed allegiance to Marxism and Fidel Castro, goes to his day job at the Texas School Book Depository above Dealey Plaza. The Warren Commission tells us he allegedly sneaks in a cheap mail-order rifle with a defective scope, yet he is going to pull off the shot of the century. 500 miles away in a New Orleans courthouse, attorneys working for Bobby Kennedy unsuccessfully tried to prosecute Carlos Marcello for conspiracy to commit immigration fraud.
He probably had a lot going through his mind. He was probably also hoping that things would go well this time in Dallas and they wouldn't have the problems they had in Chicago and Tampa.
Though the Warren Commission never links Oswald and Ruby to Carlos Marcello, later government investigators found otherwise.
Jack Ruby had come from Chicago as a small-time rackets figure to Dallas and was known as somebody who was on the fringe of the criminal life there.
The strip bar that he ran had the women on the circuit from New Orleans, from a bar owned by Carlos Marcello's brother. So I now have organized crime associations between Jack Ruby, the man who killed Oswald. What's the case with Oswald? Can I connect Oswald to organized crime?
If he really was an adamant pro-Castro communist, investigators theorize that Oswald could have been recruited by Cubans under a false flag.
Cubans would come to Oswald and would fly what's called a false flag. They would be really organized crime, and they would fly the Castro flag. They would draw Oswald into a conspiracy, and then Oswald would kill in behalf of Castro, not in behalf of Marcello. But for Oswald to be recruited, he had to be known to the organized crime people. Well, sure enough, Oswald is born and raised in New Orleans in an area that's as tough as you can get. Turns out his uncle is a bookmaker for Carlos Marcello. This is Oswald. Before he goes into the Marines, he was in a civil air patrol. And the individual who leads the young men is a man named David Ferry. David Ferry turns out to be the private investigator for Carlos Marcello.
In 2024, there are still a few investigators that credit Oswald and Oswald alone for shooting President Kennedy. To other government experts, the evidence, including the footage shot by Abraham Zapruder, tells a different story.
As it turned out, it's the most important piece of photographic documentation that we have of the JFK assassination. And what it shows, as far as I'm concerned, is clearly that Kennedy is struck, his hands come up thusly toward his throat and mouth, his body leans a little bit forward, then you see the head wound and the crimson burst as the president's skull explodes. According to the Warren Commission, the shot has come from the rear, fired by Oswald. I believe that there were two shooters, and in my opinion, one was firing from some other position in the Texas School Book Depository building, and the other one was firing from behind the picket fence on the grassy knoll. And that explains the movement of the president's body backward when he struck.
People focus too much on the forensics at Dealey Plaza. They think about, is there a second shooter, a first shooter, whatever else. Even if I'm right that all the shots came from behind the president and that the person who killed the president that day fired with Oswald's gun, you then have to determine whether Oswald was in fact the assassin, and even if he was the assassin, was he doing it for himself or for somebody else?
Look at what he did after he was picked up. One of the most significant things he did is ask for a lawyer. And the lawyer he named is John App. John App is a very prominent communist lawyer in this country. Oswald thinks that what he was doing was done in behalf of the communists. He expects Pat to show up. Of course, he doesn't. He is now getting no support from anybody connected to the communists. Oswald's not a fool. He's going to suddenly realize he's been had. They have to take Oswald out before he talks.
Former congressional investigator G. Robert Blakely thinks the mob needs to find somebody who can get close to Oswald.
That's Jack Ruby. Jack Ruby has lots of connections with the cops. They all know him. And that police station was not sealed off. Lots of people could get in and out, including Jack Ruby. I think after the assassination, I think it's that night. I think they found him in his sister's apartment. She says he was making phone calls. And at one stage, he goes in the bathroom and throws up. Over what? He can care less about Kennedy. He just got a phone call. Jack, we want you to do something for us. What he now knows is, if I don't, I'm dead.
Less than 48 hours after JFK's assassination, Jack Ruby, from point-blank range, shoots Lee Harvey Oswald dead.
Being let out by Captain Fritz. Lee Oswald has been shot. There's the man with a gun. Absolute panic. Absolute panic here in the basement of Dallas Police Headquarters. Detectives have their guns drawn. There is no question about it. Oswald has been shot at point blank range, fired into his stomach.
He is shot. He is shot.
Oswald. It is Oswald. You're off.
That is the man that shot the man.
For some, like author Gerald Posner, Ruby is not part of any mafia conspiracy, but simply a lone nut.
I think that Jack Ruby believes he's doing the right thing in his rough and tough world. That guy shot the president. He deserves to be dead. And when he's tackled and pulled off, he's shouting, "It's me, it's Jack. It's Jack Ruby, you know me." And later tells one of the police, "I did it for you, you couldn't do it." It's very interesting that I think Jack thinks he's going to walk free a hero. He completely underestimates what he's done. He's ruined the case for history. He's closed off the chance of getting the real answers from Oswald, and he's forever embedded in most people's mind that it's a conspiracy.
In 1964, during a prison interview with Warren Commission investigators, Jack Ruby pleads with them to take him back to Washington, D.C., where he can safely tell them the real story. But his request is denied, and 3 years later, in a Dallas jail cell, Ruby dies of cancer.
There's a report about 5 minutes ago by the Dallas Police Department to all of its officers that the president had died.
I was stunned. I couldn't believe it. We went home and watched television like everybody in America for 48 hours while this thing all played out.
It's a heart-clutching thought to think of those two children in the White House.
It was a nation in mourning. It was the end of innocence in this country, I think.
While the nation reels in shock, in the Tampa hotel where the president had spoken just 4 days earlier, Godfather Santo Trafficante reportedly toasts JFK's death. Arthur Lamar Waldron believes that Trafficante, along with Johnny Roselli and Carlos Marcello, have pulled off the mob's most daring hit ever.
Bobby Kennedy himself, as we now know, had looked into JFK's assassination privately, secretly, not as the Attorney General of the United States. And he had concluded Carlos Marcello was behind his brother's death. The mob bosses knew that if they could connect the killing of JFK somehow with this incredibly secret coup plan, that that would prevent a full investigation of JFK's murder. They knew how secret and sensitive this was, and it was the only way the mafia could really force Bobby Kennedy himself to cover up so much information. He was doing it to prevent World War III.
This was right after the Cuban Missile Crisis. You had Khrushchev saying, "You mess with Castro, you mess with Cuba, and we will launch nuclear missiles at you."
What still perplexes many, and the American public would be outraged if they knew about them, are the reportedly numerous government cover-ups that followed the assassination. When Secret Service agent Abraham Bolden tries to tell the Warren Commission about the threats against JFK in Chicago, he is deemed a traitor and silenced by his own agency.
When I put on that badge as a Secret Service agent, I said that I would give my life for President Kennedy. I meant that. I still feel an obligation to continue this until these real assassins are brought to justice.
In 1986, FBI informant Jack Van Landingham would say goodbye to his cellmate Carlos Marcello.
They sent me down, and he came down to see me off. And you can believe it or not, but he had a tear in his eye to see me go. I was glad that I was gone.
Van Landingham maintains it took 3 more years for the FBI to administer a polygraph in which he verified hearing Carlos Marcello confess to JFK's murder.
There's still hundreds of hours of audio tape secretly recorded by the FBI of Marcello that have never been released to this day, and some of those tapes do involve people like Jack Ruby.
Do I think that the informant actually heard Carlos say that? I think maybe he did. Do I know that for sure? I do not.
Here's the guy that admitted killing our president. Just think of all the hours and the days and the months of tape that they have. I know damn well he could be charged for what was on those tapes.
Shortly after being released from prison in 1993, Carlos Marcello dies of natural causes. Still, for a small group of researchers, there is no conspiracy behind JFK's death. Just a plain, simple truth.
You take this young, charismatic president with so much potential for the future. On the other side, you put a 24-year-old sociopathic loser like Oswald with a $12 rifle. It doesn't balance. You got to put something heavier on the Oswald side to make it seem as though that death wasn't in vain, that things aren't so random. And a conspiracy does that very nicely.
While author Gerald Posner may feel that way, he is a select few. Other researchers, including myself, believe that definitive proof of this conspiracy may someday emerge.
I think there's still a lot to be learned from all the files that haven't been released. The CIA has 1 million records alone they have not yet released.
I think the mob killed Kennedy and got away with it. And if that's true, think about what it means. The mob killed our president. And they got away with it.
Next week on The End of Innocence, the JFK assassination, I have a story I want to share with all of you. It's a dream of mine that's been in the works for years, and I can't wait to share it with you. We'll see you next week.